There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Kia ora, welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast and thanks for tuning in this week. I'm your host Jordan, I'm a mum of one, soon to be two boys and a lover of all things birth and a very passionate storyteller. The goal of Kiwi Birth Tales is to empower, inform, educate and connect families from New Zealand and all over the world, talking about the things that are so often kept to ourselves or shared with only our nearest and dearest because of this taboo that seems to surround sharing stories about birth. All stories deserve to be heard, no story more important than the other, and with this podcast you'll get a variety without bias. The podcast is not intended for medical advice. I'm not an advocate for any particular mode of birth or birth care, and this platform is simply here to share these beautiful, empowering Kiwi Birth Tales with you all. So I hope you enjoy. In this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Marnie, and Marnie takes us through her 4 pregnancies and 3 birth stories. She had 1 missed miscarriage, which we discuss in the podcast. We briefly touch on her first 2 births with River and Mac, which were both home births but pretty different to each other. And these births informed her decision to have an unassisted or a free birth with her 3rd pregnancy. So with Moby, her 3rd baby, she decided to have an unassisted birth at home. She was under the care of a midwife for her pregnancy and postpartum care, so I'll let her talk you through that. But yeah, just a really interesting episode. I've never had a planned unassisted birth on the podcast. There has been a couple of unplanned unassisted home births on the podcast. So it's interesting to hear from Marnie's perspective how she made that decision and what was involved. Just another reminder before we jump into the episode. As always, I'm not an advocate for any particular kind of birth or birth model, however you decide to birth, but absolutely am an advocate for working with professionals like a midwife or an obstetrician, making sure that you are making informed choices and doing what is safe for you and your baby. So just wanted to make it clear that although I'm really happy and excited to be sharing Marnie's story today, I appreciate that it's not the right decision for everybody, and I just wanted to make sure that that was pretty clear before we jumped into the episode. So I will let Marnie do the talking now. Enjoy. Hi, Marnie. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
I'm so stoked to be here, Jordan. I've got a sleeping baby, so all is well.
Awesome. Very cool. And do you want to tell us a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Sure thing. So I have 3 boys. It's my lot in life to have boys. River is 5 and a half, and then Mac just turned 3, and Moby is now 5 weeks old. And my husband and I and the boys live just north of Auckland in a little beach town, which we moved to just before lockdown.
Yeah, awesome. Very cool. And I think I'll get you to talk us through, I guess, a little bit of an overview, if you want to start with River, how that pregnancy sort of played out, and then a bit of a overview about that birth story.
Sure thing. And I think it kind of almost goes back to before River, because my big sister lives in Fiji and was pregnant and coming here for all her prenatal care. And so her partner couldn't always be here. So I actually ended up going to hypnobirthing classes with her before I was even pregnant. So that was before I was even planning to get pregnant or anything. So that was my first introduction to thinking about actually having a baby or giving birth or anything other than the movies, and just this, you know, this seeing it as a completely dramatic, crazy thing, and then going to hypnobirth and being like, oh my god, like that's what birth can actually be like. So I got ended up getting pregnant with Riv about maybe a year after that, and 6 weeks after our wedding, actually. So I was pregnant on our honeymoon. So kind of, we weren't trying to get pregnant actively, but we weren't not trying. We were just kind of see how things would go in the first year of being married. But yeah, it happened really quickly. And I had a really wonderful pregnancy. I didn't get any morning sickness. I was like the luckiest person in the world. Mm-hmm. I felt great and was able to keep super active. And yeah, it was pretty non-eventful, to tell you the truth. But I guess from doing the hypnobirthing course very early on, I knew that I wanted a midwife as my care provider. And I actually think probably from very early on knew that I wanted to have a home birth. So found, mm-hmm. I lived in West Auckland at the time. I found a home birth specialist midwife out there. And really just, as I said, it was just pretty non-eventful. And just read a lot of books and got really into learning about birth. And yeah, I'm a bit of a birth nut, to tell you the truth. I watched lots of videos and just found it really amazing and inspiring. I was super excited to give birth, and I was the first amongst my close friends to have a baby, and my sister had her baby here, so I was at her birth and did all of these things that I look back now. She was in the hospital and we were in labor, and we were there joking around like her husband was having her gas and things like that. And I look back now and I was like, what were we thinking? And then actually a couple of days before Riv was due, I dropped Steve at the ferry building to go to work, and then went for a walk and just started feeling cramps at about 8 o'clock in the morning. So texted my midwife, and she messaged back kind of saying, you know, cool, it could be it, you know, let me know if things start feeling funky. So I went home and baked a banana cake and just potted around, but by about 11 o'clock I messaged Steve saying, you know, I think I actually am in labor, you better come home. And my mum had popped around with her business partner, and so I actually wasn't planning on having my mum there, but she came over not knowing I was in labor and never really left, and I didn't really have the heart to tell her to leave, but it was definitely something that I had reservations about, because she was not comfortable with me having a home birth. The midwife popped in about midday just to say hi and listen to the baby, and then tootled off again to see some other women. And I think by about the amazing thing with River's birth was it sounds crazy, it was kind of a textbook birth. So I almost felt like I was outside of my body looking down on myself and going through all of these things that I kept thinking, like, oh, they said this would happen, then they said it would be like this, then they said it would be like this. It was a really amazing, I really felt that I actually surrendered to the experience. And I think it's that kind of beginner's mind. Like, I didn't really know what it was going to be like. I was so curious as to what it was going to be like. And so the day just kind of went on in this, although having my mum there, she, at one point I hopped in the pool, because we had a pool set up in the house, and my mum was next to me kind of timing the contractions and really up in my face, and the midwife arrived just to pop in and say hi, and she essentially told my mum to back the F up and leave me alone. So that was really great to have her kind of advocate for me, because my mum, she was definitely, she brought a lot of fear to the table, and thankfully as the labour progressed, I kind of went into my own world, so I didn't take that on. But it was hard for my husband, who was the one taking it on. I didn't get checked for dilation until I was about 9.5 centimetres. So I just was lying on the couch. Actually, my mum and Steve had wine and chips and were watching Suits or something on TV while I was on the other end of the couch, just in my own world. I can't remember if I asked to be checked or whether the midwife asked if I would like to be checked, but I went and lay down on the bed so she could check me and said, you know, you're 9.5. There's just a little cervical lip there, and when I got up, that's when I went into transition, because I could feel that absolute shot of adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had had a colposcopy before, so they give you a shot of adrenaline, and that was exactly what I felt. It was, yeah. And here's me again, like out of my body, thinking, oh my God, this is exactly what they say. It felt pretty crazy from then, and I did a huge power chuck, which again, I think watching so many birth videos and being so into birth stories and knowing that all of this is normal is just so reassuring, because otherwise that could be quite scary to have like a huge power chuck.
And
my midwife just kind of got me to put one leg up on a little stool to just try and get that little cervical lip out of the way, and then I jumped in the pool. But actually, then when it came to pushing, I was surprised. I was like, "What? This is hard. Like, this is so much harder than I thought." Because the rest had been this kind of surrender, like just letting my body do its thing. And now I'm like, yeah. "Oh my God, I've got to put in effort. This is way harder than I thought." And I got into the pool with kind of almost like in the hospital position, like on my back with Steve behind me. And in hindsight now, I think that's not the best way to for me to birth.
Yeah.
So I ended up pushing for quite a while, over an hour, and his head was kind of half in, half out for a wee bit, which, like Steve said, was totally freaking my mum out. But but the midwife was just, she was amazing. She had really seen it all. She had had 5 kids of her own and was very calm, and so I felt very calm about it. And then he was out, and it was pretty amazing. But I definitely found the pushing the hardest part of that first of River's birth, and the placenta came probably about 20 minutes later. I kind of stood up from the pool and birthed the placenta, and it had a clot in it, so I kind of, because I stood up, birthed the placenta, and obviously lost a bit of blood at that point, I fainted onto Steve, who was luckily behind me. But everything was fine. I came to him about it in a few seconds, and then just ended up sitting back in the bath with River for a wee while, and then just hopped out onto the couch and had a tea and a Milo, best Milo and a Marmite on toast. It was the best meal ever. Just kind of was in shock that just had happened. So it was about from 8 o'clock in the morning when I had the kind of first twinges. He was born at 10 o'clock at night. So
yeah,
that was River.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And did that birth experience, I guess, like obviously, like you said, pretty textbook kind of birth. Did that inform your choices around your second birth? So did you want to have another home birth, or what were your sort of thoughts when you were going through that pregnancy and birth?
So I definitely knew that at home was where I wanted to have the next birth, and especially after that, you know, pretty amazing experience. But I did decide to have a different midwife, even though I lived in the same place and could have had the same midwife again. I wanted to, I guess, because I was having it at home again, wanted to have had it in me that I wanted to have a different experience, and I felt maybe having a different midwife could do that. But interestingly, I didn't kind of go back. I watched some birth videos again, but I didn't really go back into doing that work or the hypnobirthing before Max birth. I almost felt a bit cocky, I think, which in hindsight was not a good idea. And I think as well, because you're a tired mum and Riv was 2.5 when Mac was born, I really got into my head during Max birth, and I just hadn't kind of done that mental preparation to get into that same amazing space of surrender. And I think as well, because I had expectations, because I'd had a birth now.
Yes.
That's the amazing thing about your first birth is there's, you know, might not be expectations, which was the case for me. So it just played out how it did. Whereas with Mac, I kind of thought to myself, well, this is how it's going to go, because this is how it's gone before. And actually my midwife lived the other side of Auckland. And So I had this thing in my mind as well that I wanted to give birth in the middle of the night. I thought that would be really romantic. I started feeling kind of little cramps and, you know, in the evening, and got super excited, like, you know, stayed up, listening, I think I was folding t-shirts for my business and listening to my birth playlist and being like, oh my God, I'm going to just labour by myself in the middle of the night. It's going to be so great. But ended up just staying up stupidly, which is like rookie birth era, staying up when you're in that kind of pre-labour phase. So I think I got to bed and then texted the midwife in the morning. And I think because it was a second birth and she lived the other side of Auckland and with traffic, she really wanted to get to me in case it was a fast birth.
Mm-hmm.
So she arrived probably about 8 o'clock. And then I think from the moment she was there, and she just stayed all day, she just stayed the whole time, she didn't kind of pop in and out, I almost felt like I needed to do things to get the labour going, because I'm like, well, she's here now, I really need to get this going. So I really got into my head and I was, you know, curb walking like a crazy woman and just kind of stressing out, which, yeah, it was such a different experience to River. And I was very aware of this, but I almost felt like I couldn't stop myself. I couldn't get into that place of just letting it flow. Mm-hmm. So we were doing all the kind of like Rochambeaus and all the kind of different positions and curb walking. And even though she wasn't, you know, she was just kind of sitting in the corner pottering away and making herself cups of tea and things, I really had it in my head that I needed to get things going. So it was a really different experience. And but it was great. She taught me how to go and check myself. So I went and did that a few times over the day. And both River and Mac, I never really, my waters never really broke. So I could check myself, which I found really, that was quite a grounding experience and kind of brought me back into my body. But again, I just kind of kept, I'm saying, oh, I think there's a lip like I had last time, but I was just almost kind of overthinking and thinking as well to myself, it's not really happening until I have that transition spew, kind of like I really put it on myself that it was going to be like River's birth. But all in all, I think I probably went into transition about 5 p.m. and hopped in the pool and did my big vomit and so delightful. And then, but this time I got into a different position, like I was kind of on one knee with the other knee up, and really found it was such a amazing pushing, like he came out, like I could really feel him. I had my hand down there feeling his head come out. I felt so connected to being able to kind of not control that, but like I felt that I kind of knew what I was doing a bit more, and the position felt a lot better. And so the pushing part was only about 20 minutes, and it felt, I wasn't confused by it. I felt really kind of like I could do it. And especially after a lot of the day thinking like those times I can't do it, like, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing. Then this pushing part felt really empowering. And he was born at about 7 o'clock at night. And again, I was like, I need my Milo and I need my my toast on the couch. Both pretty, and looking back now, I think pretty similar births in a way. Just I think with Mac, I really got into my head. So that was something I was super aware of for Moby's birth, that I couldn't really rest on my laurels. I had to keep doing that work of learning to relax and learning to surrender and learning to let my body surrender and let go and soften and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And I guess how old are River and Mac now? So Moby's just been born not long ago.
There's a 3-year age gap between Mac and Moby, and then Rev's 5.5.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. Cool. And did you sort of know that you were trying to fall pregnant, or how did you sort of find out that you were pregnant with Moby?
So I had fallen pregnant at the end of 2019 and had a missed miscarriage. Yeah. So that kind of wasn't planned, but then when I'd had the missed miscarriage, I guess it became more in my head that we would like to have a third one. But we did move from, we were living in Methven at the time, we moved up north. So I kind of thought, I don't want to put pressure on myself. And it is a strange time after a a miscarriage around being nervous about getting pregnant again. So I, again, was trying to play it cool and think, if it does happen, great, and if it doesn't. So I wasn't tracking my cycle or anything. And just
when you really say missed miscarriage, do you just want to tell us what that means for someone who might not have heard that term before?
Yeah, so from my understanding, it's where the egg doesn't actually fertilize, but your body believes that it's pregnant. So so when I went for the 12 weeks, so I started bleeding. We were away on a trip for New Year's. I started bleeding. So a week later, so I continued bleeding over our whole holidays. And when I got back, I went for a scan. So they could see there was a sac, but nothing in it. So it wasn't, so there was no embryo. It was just the sac. Mm-hmm. So my body was believing it was pregnant, but there was nothing there. So I had a kind of a natural miscarriage. So, which again was another thing that really took me by surprise. It was quite an intense experience. It really was like giving birth, which, you know, our bodies are so amazing. As hard as it is going through something like that, I really had a reverence for my body, kind of knowing what to do and birth that that sac. So yeah, that had happened early January, and then I must have got pregnant in May, if my maths is about right.
So
we were super excited, and I was definitely nervous, although didn't want that to overshadow the pregnancy, so tried really hard to, again, have an open mind that the pregnancy might not follow through, but also really excited that it could and might and etc. I'm not really one to wait to 12 weeks because I think it's so important to share the whole, you know, I have a platform talking to women, and I think it's one of my mantras is to really share the whole experience. So I think we shared that we were pregnant when I was about 8 weeks along with everyone. And yeah, thankfully, again, it was a really, I didn't get any morning sickness, which I can imagine when you have two boys running around would have been just absolute mayhem, but I was lucky that didn't happen. But I did feel really pregnant really quickly, and I found that quite overwhelming. So by about 20 weeks, people were like, "Oh, any day now." I'm like, "Definitely not."
Oh god, I feel a bit like that too.
And we found out with all three boys what we were, the gender, the sex, and so finding out that we're having our third boy was, I knew all along that of course we were going to have another boy, but we really only had those 20 week scans in each of the pregnancies. I think those scans are so amazing when you get to see, and they run you through all the anatomy, and it's so incredible. But also to find out what we were having. I found I was so much more exhausted this pregnancy. I really had to set limits with myself, because I'm a doer, that I had to slow down, which I found really hard, because then I ended up, because I didn't want to, you know, life can't stop, so you end up kind of bossing people around. But I think that's another lesson in kind of asking for help and not pushing yourself to the absolute limit. So I was just learning to slow down, to listen to my body when things physically felt too much. And I could really, like, my body really told me this time when I'd kind of maxed out on my physical exertion.
And I guess, I know you've got two boys already, so I just can't even imagine, like, I just struggle running around after Jai, and I've only got him. So how, I guess, do you have anything that helped you, or any kind of practical tips throughout your pregnancy that you feel like you would do again, or you'd give advice to someone else in that situation?
Well, I have a great practical tip, but it's not going to work for everyone, and that is have a stay-at-home husband. When we left Auckland a couple of years ago, my husband quit his job and became kind of this primary caregiver.
Yeah, awesome.
So that's been our case for about 2.5 years now. And so while I was pregnant, I run my business, which is an online business, and I run that from home. So the boys go to a couple of days a week childcare, or we're homeschooling River, but he does 2 days at a nature program.
Yeah.
So Steve was their primary caregiver, and I'm always around, but definitely defer a lot of the hands-on parenting to him, which
yeah.
I would really recommend. Know that it can't work for everyone, but I think as well, we've moved to a small town, and I joined Play Centre as soon as I got here and have really felt a sense of community.
Yeah.
And these women, because it's a small town as well, so you have a proximity to people, so people do just drop by and see if you need anything. Mm. And I think that's something that I was joined up to a Play Centre in Auckland, but it didn't quite have that same feeling. So
yeah,
I just really recommend, it's that finding your village. And I know that it's something that every mother craves, and just figuring out how you can do that for yourself is just my number one tip, because we're not meant to do this alone. Like, that's something I've learned from being a parent, is it's hard. It's hard because it's hard, but it's made harder because we're doing it without the support network that traditionally was always around mothers and babies and young kids.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Cool. And I know that you talked about in your last birth, you didn't do as much work around the sort of lead up and the birth videos and I guess the educational side of birth. Mm. So did you do that differently this time around? And do you want to talk us through if you were with a different midwife again and what your sort of choices were there?
Yeah. So because we're now up north, so I went looking for a midwife around here, of which there's not many because we're in a very small town.
Yeah.
But I was really lucky that one of the midwives up here is had a real interest in home birth, so that was an easy choice for me with her. But I guess probably at about the 12-week mark, I started thinking about this idea of birthing unassisted without a midwife present.
Yeah.
And it's something that I had been on my radar ever since I had become interested in birth and been to those hypnobirthing classes, but it didn't seem like, well, actually, in my first births, I really loved that kind of wise woman aspect of having a midwife there. I really cherished that. So I wouldn't go back and do anything differently now, but it was kind of always this little niggling idea in my head of what would it be like if, you know, the only person I could look to in birth is myself, and how deep would that mean that I went to, you know, into those far reaches of what I'm capable of and what's my body capable of, and the trust in my body and my baby. So that idea was floating around, and I toyed with it and spoke to my husband, and then did a lot of research about what that looks like and the reality of it, with where I live being, I would say I'm about 35 minutes from the nearest hospital. I guess I went into deep research mode and then also deep soul searching mode. You know, what are my reasons around wanting to do this? Is it to try and prove something? Is it like, you know, really trying to sort through the bullshit of what it meant to me to give birth, and therefore what it would mean to do it without kind of a carer. So I kind of decided by about 20 weeks that it's something that really resonated with me, and an experience that I really felt aligned with my beliefs in birth and my beliefs in, you know, what my body and my baby are kind of meant to do, you know, all of that. And was really nervous because I didn't want to break up with my midwife, if that makes sense. I didn't want it to be that I, that she wasn't part of my prenatal care. Well, I wanted to see what her thoughts on it were. So I was a bit nervous, but I had a conversation with her, and she was incredibly supportive and really said to me that she would be there as much as I needed her or would like her to be there, and that it didn't have to be a black and white thing, as in I didn't have to say I don't want you, see you later, and never hear from her again. That she could be there, but it could just always be an open dialogue as to how much involvement she had in the prenatal and yeah. birth. So I was incredibly lucky. Well, I'm just incredibly grateful that she was so supportive with that. So mm-hmm. I continued all my prenatal care with her, but we kind of just toned it down a bit. So I had less monitoring and sometimes we would just talk in our appointments. And I asked a lot of questions and her and my husband had a meeting. So we just talked a lot, really, about different scenarios, about what we would do if certain things happened, about the risks. And I have, all my pregnancies have been low risk and there are no factors within my history or within the history of my family of any kind of risk factors. So she was comfortable knowing that there was a, you know, that the plan was to not call her, essentially. So yeah, it was a very different experience because I knew going into something like having an unassisted birth, and interestingly, I actually know about three women who've unintentionally had free birth. Yeah. Especially being rural up there, here sometimes the midwife just doesn't make it, and it all happens too quickly. So I just talked to a lot of people who had experiences without a midwife present, and really did a lot of looking at what my fears were, you know, and working through them and whether they were legitimate fears and how could I then put plans in place to ease those fears, or whether they were fears that I just needed to work through.
Mm. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And so I guess, did that mean that your plan was, or in terms of how much you can plan birth when you went into labor, like what was the sort of process that you had in place with your midwife? So would you let her know that you were in labor, or what were the, I guess more the administrative aspects of it?
Yeah. So she lives about 10 minutes away. So, we always plan to let her know that I was in labor because it was the first time she had ever had a woman kind of overseeing a woman who was choosing to free birth. And so she did a lot of chatting with a lot of her colleagues as well, just to ease her mind. Cause when something's new, it's, can be scary. So we'd always plan to call her and let her know. And she had even said at one point, I can just come and park my car outside your house and kind of sleep in my car if you want me there. And I think, interestingly, my husband, well, maybe not interestingly, I guess it kind of makes sense because I was doing so much work on my own working through any fears that I had, that he actually had to do that for himself. So that was a big thing for him. He really was worried that if anything went wrong, it would fall onto him. And I feel like that's a really big part of choosing to birth unassisted. It's actually communicating to everyone, because I was having a birth photographer. That was the one thing that I had chosen to have. Communicating to everyone and to my midwife as well, that I was taking full and complete responsibility of this birth and the choices that I was making through it. So, you know, to put that on my husband, and he felt really nervous that, as I said, anything went wrong, that he would be the one to have to step in. And so, A, we prepped as much as possible as to different scenarios and what he could do and what ones needed attention and what ones were just things that we could kind of work through ourselves. Really work for him, working through what his fears were, which, you know, are the obvious ones, that things would medically go wrong and that there would be an emergency. But we had a plan in place. It would be to firstly call an ambulance if things, you know, we kind of had a list of things that were call ambulance and a list of things that were call midwife. And so I think that he's a very kind of rational person. So having kind of lists and things that, you know, if A happens, do B kind of thing really helped him. And knowing that the birth photographer who had been at a lot of births and had his five children herself, that she would at least be there to, you know, to have another person to talk to, I think, or if Steve felt uncomfortable with something, he could maybe check in with her, kind of thing. I think that really helped him. So, yeah, we just were trying to cover all our bases without kind of going into that, you know, fear mode of, I think that was a big thing about free birthing, is I am very aware that birth is inherently, you know, carries inherent risks. I have deep reverence for birth and what an incredible but full-on process that it is. And that even if you've had two really straightforward births, that doesn't necessarily mean that there might not be a complication. I'm super aware that birth isn't something to be blasé about, but at the same time I really didn't want to get stuck in a worst case scenario mindset. And I have a few friends who are in the medical system, and so, you know, really, and so I had them kind of talk to me, really worried about my decision, and just trying to help them understand that because they're in the medical system, they see things that are really traumatic with birth, but that's not the lens that I was viewing things from, that I didn't want to live in that worst case scenario mindset. So really trying to pull myself out of there and think about the real risks, but also the reality that my body has done this before, that it knows what to do, and that, you know, like the hope was that it was just going to do its thing again.
And I guess, did you have any periods throughout this pregnancy and you know, your whole journey towards having an unassisted birth, was there any time where you thought maybe you didn't want to do that, maybe it wasn't the right decision, or were you just sort of the whole time 100% sure that that was what you were going to do?
Do you know what's so funny is I've found being a mother really, really hard. I've had so many times of really doubting myself. I've had huge amounts of anxiety since becoming a mum, and really struggled with this whole journey. But interestingly, birth for me and the trust that I have in the birthing process is something so outside of all of that worry, and it even blows my mind that doubt, it's almost like I kind of forced myself to doubt the decision, but naturally I actually never doubted it. It's like my little anxious mind was like, I'm coming in to see if you doubt it, and it just felt so, I felt so confident and comfortable. There was actually never a time where I thought it wasn't the right decision, and nothing happened in my pregnancy that would made me doubt that. Although, when I went for that 20-week scan, he was measuring quite big, but that's exactly the same as what happened with both the other boys, and they were born at 3.9 and 3.6 kilos. So I knew they just had, their dad is really tall, so their measurements come out all whack. So, you know, kind of little things pinged up that maybe if I hadn't have had births before might have pinged some anxiety, but because I'd had those kind of same things creep up, like even in Moby's pregnancy, which was the same with Max, you know, they measured big on the 20-week scan, and then my fundal measurements weren't kind of tracking as big, but that's exactly what happened with Moby. So I just felt really confident, actually, and there wasn't a time that I doubted it. I was really excited by it, and had a few friends here who had home births and not unassisted births, but who were really encouraging and had so really good people just to talk through any reservations with.
Yeah, cool. All right, and do you want to talk us through, I guess, when your labour started and how far along you were? And I know you mentioned you had a birth photographer coming, so what was your plan with that? And, yeah, do you want to take us through, I guess, the start of your labour?
Cool. So, yeah, as I said, I was really looking forward to it. And I think he was due on the 30th, and I went to, I thought he was going to come at Easter. I just had it in my mind that he was going to come at Easter. And but I went to the chiropractor on Monday, which I'd been doing through pregnancy, which I really feel helped. I'd been going kind of weekly since about 30 weeks. So I went on the Monday and she just did some amazing little, what are they called? She just did some amazing kind of opening, like almost opening up of things. So she was trying to create a bit of space and, because everything was so, she said, your body's really kind of at its limit right now. Mm-hmm. So she did an adjustment on me, and then I went home in the next afternoon, which was his due date, and the midwife was actually here dropping off some adult diapers for postpartum. I said to her, I actually think I'm feeling some little cramps starting. And she was like, cool, I'll just listen to his heartbeat one more time so we all feel really confident that he's doing great. So we did that. And then by that kind of late afternoon, I was saying to myself, you know, I think this is on. And so, we put the birth, like we blew up the birth pool in the lounge. And again, I had this, like I see birth as this kind of romantic idea of birth, which I think is so funny because then I must always forget the reality of it and then go on to the next one being like, oh my god, it's going to be so romantic. And again, I was like, oh, you know, if I do the maths compared to the last births, if I kind of start labor now, then I'll have my middle of the night birth again. But so we just went to the beach with the kids, and I said, Steve, like, I'm probably going to vomit, so let's have some dinner that I won't regret when I bring it up again. So we just got some pizza and I was like, cool, let's go to bed early, all of us. So we all went and hopped into bed at like 8 o'clock. And by about midnight, I was too uncomfortable in bed and wanted to get up. So I was having surges that were not regular, and not anything kind of like I could almost sleep through them. And well, I probably did sleep through some of them, and could obviously just chat to Steve. But I really wanted to get up out of bed by about midnight. So Steve was like, do you want some company? So we got up and came into the lounge and put some music on. But then we started playing Monopoly Deal. And Steve's like, if you can play Monopoly Deal, you probably should be sleeping. So I was like, okay, cool. Let's like go to bed. And at this point, I went into my own room because I had been sleeping in we have a room with lots of beds that we kind of co-sleep in. So I left them in there and I came into my own bed and fell asleep. But I woke up about 3 o'clock with really, the contractions had really ramped up. So it kind of woke me up, and then amazingly I could kind of fall asleep after the contraction, and then it woke me up again. And I was seeing that they were about 10 minutes apart. So I was luckily just falling back asleep, would wake up, having to breathe a little bit through it, and really like it took all my, was taking all my attention, but then I'd fall back asleep. And that happened till about 7 o'clock in the morning when everyone woke up and charged back into the house. And then, yeah, we just kind of, because they weren't getting any closer together or stronger, I kind of realised that we might have a bit to go. So Steve went and dropped Mac at kindy. We decided to keep Riv home from his nature school because it's like 30 minutes away. And the plan was to have the boys around as much as they wanted to be. And the birth photographer actually had asked if her daughter could come along. So she is one of her children is an 8-year-old girl who really is interested in birth, so that had been the conversation. So so in my mind I thought that she could always play with the kids if she was around. And yeah, really that morning is a blur. I said to Steve, Steve, we've got to remember what happened in the day so I can tell people. But we just kind of potted around the house. I would go every now and then and walk. We've got a bit of lawn outside, so I'd do a few laps walking outside, and the contractions were so manageable. and they weren't really weren't ramping up, but they weren't going away either. They were just sticking around that 10-minute mark, and then I'd have one 4 minutes apart, then 1 minute. It was super random.
Yeah.
And again, like, I'd learnt from Max Birth just to not make it mean anything, you know, really not get stuck in my head about, you know, well, if labour's going well, then they should be getting closer together and things. I was just trying to really not get into that headspace. Yeah, we just potted around the house, and then I'd go try and lie down for a bit and walk for a bit and put on some clary sage incense, and, you know, would make sure I was drinking lots of water and have a banana every now and then. And but by about 2 o'clock, I was saying to Steve that things started to feel like they were, you know, moving along. But at this point, my mum had called him to go and meet the Chorus internet provider up at her house. So he's like, I'm just gonna quickly go and get that out of the way now. And I was like, cool, go do that now. And he picked up Mac from kindy as well, and then came back. And when he came back, I said to him, I'm gonna call the photographer and I would like you to start filling up the pool, which he hadn't checked whether the fitting for the hose fit on our tap. So there he is filling the pool by bucket. And the photographer arrived at about 3 o'clock, I think. And again, interestingly, I had this kind of voice in my head that now she was there, things needed to, you know, I really needed to be in proper labour and things. It was like this own weird internal pressure that I had of, almost like having an audience and needing to perform for them, which is so strange. And I really realised that and really tried to not let that, you know, get in the way of understanding that the labour was going to go how it was going to go. And the whole idea around being at home is that you feel that you don't have to perform, that you're in your own space and it can go at whatever pace it's going to go. But things were definitely intense, and I got in the pool around 4 o'clock, but I almost forgot that the whole point of hopping in the pool is that it is a pain relief. And so when the contractions weren't as painful, I was kind of thinking, oh, fuck, have I messed up, and should I not have hopped in the pool yet? But so I was in there for probably about an hour and a half, and Mac took off his clothes and jumped in and was swimming around. And actually, I've got some amazing photos of him, like, trying to give me a little massage and, like... so I was happy to have him in there until about 5:30, when things really started. My contractions never got really close together, but they were really intense. So I was confused in a way, thinking, because we have this idea of how labour should look, you know. So in my mind, I was like, they have to be close together for it to really be, you know, getting towards the pointy end of the stick with it. But I had again checked myself. I think I'd only really checked myself a few times because I didn't want to obsess over how dilated I was. And Steve was checking, I don't know if people know, but my midwife with Mac had taught me that you can look at above a butt crack, and there's kind of a purple line that goes up above the butt crack, and that can be an indicator of how dilated you are. So essentially, if there's a purple line running the whole way up the top of your butt crack, so I'm like, Steve, check my butt crack. He's like, excuse me. then that can show dilation. So I was asking Steve to do that, and I checked myself a few times, but was really just wanting to, you know, not look at clocks and not really have expectations about where I should be, and just really trying to feel how my body felt and listen to my own noises and how much I could concentrate on my breathing. I had to concentrate on breathing to get through a contraction. So about 5:30, when my eldest son decided to jump in the pool and the boys were messing around and splashing, I was like, okay. And I think I said a few swear words and told Steve to get them out of the pool and put some TV on for them. And then, yeah, I think at that point I went into a bit of a thought spiral, thinking, I was just confused was my main thing. And that Steve asked me at one point whether I wanted him to call the midwife. And I just then had a good chat to him, and I was able to talk in between contractions, and I just said to him, I'm just really confused because I feel like this should be more intense, and if it's not that intense now, then there's obviously a long way to go, and that's confusing to me. And so I was getting a bit distressed in that sense, that, you know, this idea that you might have a really long time to go. And the photographer was amazing. She was like, maybe you just need to change a change of scene. Why don't you jump out of the pool and take a little walk around the back? And I had it in my head as well. I was like, I'd been burping a bit and feeling like I needed to be sick, but you know, this idea that when I go into transition, then I vomit, that kind of wasn't happening. So then I'm like, okay, well, I'm not in transition, which means I'm not close to having my baby, and a bit like, ugh, which of course, when you are out of that, you know that that kind of means you're going to, you know, those I can't do it, what's going on, is sometimes a sign that you are actually going into transition. So, which I think the photographer knew, so she was just like, you know, why don't you just go and have a little walk outside. So she came out with me, and I've got a little deck out the back, so I just kind of did a little curb walky thing on the deck, and then the contractions really just went to another level. And but I just, in my mind, and when I would get a strong contraction, I would say, like, that was a good one, because it was like this real sense that the stronger and more intense the contractions were, that that's such a good thing. That means you're getting close to, you know, to having your baby. So I was out there kind of having these crazy contractions where I'd have to kind of lean all over the photographer, like grab onto her. But saying, like, that was such a good one, and kind of getting excited by it. And then I did my big power check, and I was like so excited by that point. I'm like, yes. And so I came and hopped back into the pool, and just already almost walking back inside was starting to feel the urge to push. So hopped into the pool and got back into that same position that I'd felt so good with Mac, and just, it was the most pushing. Moby out was the most incredible, joyous, amazing experience, because I reached down and so I could feel the sac bulging. So in the first few pushes, the sac broke, and so I looked down to check the colour of the water. It's amazing how you're in this crazy birth zone, but then you can snap out of it to do things like check the colour of the water, then like go back into the so the fluid was clear, so that was a good sign. And felt a huge sense of relief once that the sac had burst, and his head dropped down, so I could feel his head. And then I just left my hand there kind of guiding it out, and Steve said I was just grinning the whole time, because I was so relieved, but also just I knew that this was kind of, this means my, you know, your baby is really about to be born. So I could feel his head, and then as I a next contraction came and I pushed, I could feel his ears, and it was honestly the most the craziest. I just felt so connected, because I think it's, you know, sometimes you look at your baby, you're like, oh my god, that was inside me, and there's kind of a disconnect. But And even more so than with Mac, like feeling his ears, I was like, this is him. And we had named him actually while I was pregnant, and that was the first time that we had actually picked a name and really stuck with it before having the bubba. And so I was able to say, like, Moby, like, it's so, like, you're here, and he had a name, and I could feel his ears, and it just was such an incredible feeling. And I felt so, it was like, my body had done its part, and now it was time for me to do my part to kind of to bring him out into the world. So it was only about three or four pushes that that he came out, and I was kind of just gently kind of easing, not easing his head out, because, you know, they do that themselves, but just kept my hand there. And then he, you know, the head came out in about two pushes, and then his shoulders came out, and then that kind of, they slip out. And so I was able to grab him, because I had my hand already down there, and bring him up to my chest. And actually, with all three babies, the umbilical cord was not wrapped around their neck, but almost up like a holster. So like up around one shoulder, around the back of the neck, and then down under the armpit again. So kind of untangled him. And again, I think from watching so many birth videos and from being on so many forums about free birthing and things, just understanding that, you know, if there's a cord there, you know, people think that it's so dire if there's a cord around the neck or around the body, that actually you've got a few seconds. It's you know, they're still attached, everything's going to be okay, you can be calm about it. So kind of just calmly unwrapped his cord, which then I was able to properly bring him up onto my chest, and kind of was just rubbing his back and talking to him. And it took him probably a minute to fully give a good cry and a good, you know, they really kind of spring to life. And but just being really trusting that he was just taking that minute to adjust to being out into the world. And and then he gave a big hearty cry and we all just had huge grins on our faces. And literally 2 seconds later, Matt came running in and jumped in the pool and came over, and he was like, oh, can I paint his nails yellow, which is his favorite color? And we all just absolutely burst out laughing. We just sat in the pool for a bit, and River, my eldest son, came in and was a bit, he was a bit reserved, but Mac was right in there next to me, touching and wanting to cuddle him and things. So I just had him up on my chest for a bit, and we got some flannels, and I was just putting some warm water. Oh, and this whole time Steve had about 2 kettles on the go and was constantly topping it up with hot water. It was just so incredible. And I think the last pushing part, it was, I can't explain, it was like I just felt so connected to him and to my body. And it's funny now, even when I like pat his head and have him up, I feel his ears, and I was like, wow, that was, you know, just such a connection to actually growing him inside me.
Awesome. And so from there, I guess typically with a home birth and in your previous births, probably the midwife will have checked him over and checked you over and made sure you didn't need any stitches or anything like that. So what was the process following your birth? Did you have a plan for the midwife to come at some stage, or what happened from there?
Yeah, so we had always planned that she would come at some point after he was born, to check us, check that we were okay, to meet him. She was really excited to meet him. So she probably arrived about half an hour after he was born. And by this stage, I had hopped out of the pool and was on the couch and just snuggled up on the couch with him. So she came in and she didn't really check him then. He was all cuddled up and he had gone straight onto the boob and was going for it. But I was getting such intense afterbirth pains. I didn't have any after my first birth. I don't think I had any. I don't remember them after Mac, but this was like next level proper. Felt like, you know, going into transition contractions kind of thing. And I think as well, because your body, it's almost like, but your body has a bit of trauma. It's like these things are happening after it's been such an intense time. It was just like toe curling. So I was a bit surprised by that because I hadn't really had it in the other births. And in both River and Mac's birth, I'd birthed the placenta about half an hour later. So I was sitting on the couch just chilling out. A friend had dropped off some sourdough bread, so we were just having something to eat. There was no kind of bleed, so the placenta hadn't released. There was no, that was the first thing the midwife did. She just kind of sat with me and we just kind of waited for that release and the bit of blood to then go and kind of go sit on the toilet or do whatever to birth the placenta. But it just wasn't really happening. So after about an hour, she asked me if I wanted to go and sit on the toilet and try and do a wee or something just to see if that might help the placenta release. and I went and sat on the toilet, and it literally took me about 10 minutes to do a wee. It was almost like my body was too afraid to let anything go. And so I did a wee, but that still didn't really release the placenta, and she gave a very light tug on the actually then we came back and we cut the cord. So by this stage it had been over about an hour, and obviously all the cord was clear of all the blood, and Moby had got it all, so we came and we cut the cord just to kind of have a bit of freedom of me moving around as well. And he was able to have some skin to skin with his dad at that point, and we just sat there talking about what we could do to try and release the placenta. So having him breastfeeding as much as possible to try and get all that oxytocin flowing again to release the placenta. And my midwife did offer me some oxytocin, which I didn't want to do. I wanted to give the placenta a chance to release naturally. And again, this is something that I'd done a lot of reading about, and not being worried that it hadn't released straight away. And I wasn't, my midwife could feel my tummy and feel the uterus contracting when I was having, so she could feel it was kind of moving back down into having a bit of tone in it and moving back down to a smaller kind of, it got really hard. Like, it's amazing how it goes from this, holding a baby down back to a baseball. But so she was definitely keeping an eye on that. And in that way, I was really grateful to have her there, because I think in those moments after having the baby, you're in this kind of dream world. So to kind of come back down to that, like thinking about the logistical and practical sides of things, I was really grateful to have her there then. And so then maybe a half an hour later, she asked me if I wanted to go back and sit on the toilet and see if just even that positioning might help. So I did, and I kind of got the urge to go to the toilet again, and with that my placenta released. So it was probably about 2 hours after, and I'd been having such strong afterbirth pains that it was such a relief to birth the placenta. Such a relief. And the photographer was sticking around so that she could take some photos of it, and my midwife and I looked at it, and she showed me through, which I really appreciate. I think it's so amazing to kind of get a little tour of your placenta, which has nourished your baby for so long. So everything was, it was completely intact, and there was nothing. So that was another great thing for her. Like, I had done research about how to check your placenta to check that there was nothing retained or no clots of worrying size. So, but it was nice to have her there for that. And then, we just kind of cuddled up on the couch and said goodbye to everyone, and that was that.
Yeah. Amazing. Very cool. And I guess what were the next few days and weeks like, and how did your recovery go? And, all of that. Did you notice a difference in this postpartum period in comparison to Mekin River? And, do you want to take us through that?
So both boys had had real issues with tongue ties. So with River, it was, as I said, the births went so well, but with Riv in the postpartum period, the first 4 or 5 weeks were pretty dreamy, but then he started kind of almost developing reflux, whereas my understanding of reflux is it's something that they have when they're really, really little and it gets better. But from about 5 weeks on, he really started developing severe reflux and was really colicky, and we just went on this huge journey of thinking it might be allergies and whatever. And in the end, at 8 months, he was diagnosed with posterior tongue tie. So it had been such a journey for us to, and by that stage, feeding was an issue, and wind was an issue, and it was just, it really almost broke me. But so when Mac was born, we immediately look for that. And Steve, their dad, has a tongue tie, and these, you know, it's often hereditary, but I didn't know anything about. And because it was a posterior tongue tie, they're much harder to diagnose. So they're a deeper tongue tie. They're not so visible, but there are a few lactation consultants, and we ended up seeing an ENT specialist who specialises in these posterior tongue ties. So there was a lot of learning that went on with us through our experience with River. So when Mac was born, we straight away got him checked for a tongue tie, which he had exactly the same tongue tie. And I'm like this, like I tell every new mum about checking for tongue ties because of my experience. But it's not always obvious. Like both boys never lost weight. Actually, all three boys never lost weight. Were breastfeeding well. I didn't really have ripped up or super like bleeding sore nipples like usually associate with tongue ties. But there were other signs that now I'm super vigilant of. So not being able to get a deep latch, really getting those sucking blisters is another sign that their latch isn't great. Being able to hear clicking when they feed. So all of these signs were present with Mac and Moby. And so with Mac, we got his tongue tie lasered in Hamilton at about 8 days old. But then we had to get it revised with the ENT specialist when he was about 6 months old. So with Moby, we straight away booked in to go and see the ENT specialist when he was a week old. And so he had, a grade 4 posterior tongue tie and a lip tie. All of the kids had lip ties as well. So we got that sorted straight away. And you know, he was putting on weight. Everything, it wasn't immediately a dire situation, but I just knew from my experience with River. Because River was 8 months old, it was actually affecting him being able to eat solids and things as well. He wasn't really able to move the food around in his mouth because he had that restriction. So you know, even if there aren't immediate concerns, I just am such an advocate for really double, triple checking that there might not be a tongue tie there. So yeah, that was high on our list of priorities once he was born. But yeah, I definitely, as I was saying about where we've moved to in the community here, we felt so supported. Like, the day after he was born, one of my friends came and picked up the two big boys and had them for the day so that Steve and I could, you know, just literally stay in bed. And I really had it in my mind because with Mac, I didn't take any time off running my business. So literally the day after he was born, I was back on social media and back on, you know, packing orders and just, I was a crazy person. And so I was super aware of not wanting to do that because I think it did... just going straight back into the hustle did affect my ability to bond with Mac. And as I said, I had a lot of anxiety postpartum. So just being super aware of the things that would trigger that and really not wanting to go down that train again. And I almost think I have some sort of PTSD from River, him crying so much. So was, I'm just so super aware of those triggers for me and communicating so well with Steve about what I need and you know, how to ask him for help and just also learning to ask for help, you know. So, and I kind of had to practice while I was pregnant. People would offer help, and even if I didn't really, I'm doing air quotes, need it, I would say yes because it was just me practicing saying yes to people offering help. So that's been a really amazing difference this time. And there's been a meal train with the placenta mums of dropping us round meals. And Mac, even though he had the tongue tie sorted, he still really had trouble with wind and he cried a lot. And Steve was at work full time. So, I had a really, really hard time in the first year of Mac's life and essentially until Steve quit his job, just really struggling with anxiety I was in that fight or flight mode a lot. And I really found it hard to bond with him and him crying kind of sent me away from him, if that makes sense, rather than that natural motherly urge to go to your child. So, I had a lot of battles at that time and knew that I needed more support. And needed a big toolbox to kind of deal with them. So having Steve around has just been so amazing. You know, I vividly remember when he was, 2 weeks after, and that's what happens. Dads get 2 weeks off if they're lucky, and then they go back to work. And I remember crying and begging him not to go back to work because I just did not feel capable of having the two boys. River wasn't in daycare, so, I did not feel capable. But this time it's just been such a blessing not to have to worry about that, and having that support here full time is just amazing, because if ever you're overwhelmed, you can just have an adult to talk to, which I can't stress enough how important that is, and just be able to kind of change the scene. So if I'm overwhelmed with Moby, then I can ask Steve if he wants to swap, kind of thing, and then I'll go and hang out with the big boys. And and just even physically, Moby doesn't love, none of my boys have loved lying down sleeping. So there's been a lot of baby wearing or letting them sleep on my chest, which I look back now and I used to think something was wrong with Mac, but really understanding that that's just a normal baby, but I just didn't have the capacity or logistically it didn't work to do that when it was just me at home and with, running around after a 2.5-year-old, whereas now I'm more relaxed because, that's what he needs, obviously, and I just have the capacity to actually do that. So, I think he is a calmer baby, and I think he doesn't have the same wind issues as the other boys did. And the tongue tie has really, the release really went well, and his feeding's really good. But I think also I'm just capable to give him what he needs because I've got the capacity to do that within my circumstances.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And is there anything else that you want to share about any of your journeys or your births or anything like that that you feel like we haven't covered in the episode?
Not hugely. I just think it's, I just think one thing to say, it's just the realization that for me has become such a big part of my mothering journey, and with the births, going into each birth and then mothering, just how much a part of your own personal work of kind of figuring out, what your triggers are and what your fears are, and really figuring out who you are as a woman. That's been such a journey for me through my births and mothering. It's been hard. Being a mum has been the hardest thing, and but also the most rewarding, because kind of without those, being pushed to those limits, and I think that's what birth does. Sometimes it pushes you to that limits and you kind of get to see your capabilities. And I just, that's been my experience of birth and motherhood in general.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Marnie, for coming on the podcast and sharing your different experiences with us. I know that there were lots of people out there really interested in hearing your story, and I think you've covered it really well. So I'm just super grateful that you're willing to come on and chat with me. And I know that the listeners are going to love it.
Oh, thank you so much, Jordan. I've loved it. And feel really, really grateful that you are out there just sharing just the multitude of experiences of birth, and just making us all feel like we are connected to each other through this experience, which I think is so important.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it as always. I'd love to hear from you. If you want to let me know in the review form, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, if you loved this episode or what you love about the podcast, if you could leave me a star review, that would be amazing. Otherwise, I'd absolutely love to hear from you on the Kiwi Birth Tales Instagram or through email, kiwibirthtales@gmail.com. Otherwise, I will speak to you next week.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.